Tonight we're going to discuss two things. First of all, we're going to discuss what types of persons can be happy in this world. And secondly, we're going to discuss your lifespan and what's it to you, the length of your lifespan. Okay, so the first half of our discussion is going to be about what kind of person can be happy in this world. According to the ancient spiritual text of India, Srimad Bhagavatam, which I know some of you are reading, those of you who have come here more than once, you know that first you start out generally with Bhagavad Gita. That's the spiritual classic of ancient India. And then you proceed to the multi-volumed spiritual encyclopedia called Srimad Bhagavatam, which takes the themes of Bhagavad Gita and expands upon them. Alright, so in that multi-volumed, delightful spiritual encyclopedia, there is one verse out of 18,000, which explains that only two kinds of persons can be happy in this world, and everyone else in between suffers. Now, that means we're basically talking about three categories. So let's see which category you fit in. Okay. The first category of person that can be happy in this world, sort of, that's a very common occurrence these days. That kind of person is someone who, I guess you would say, is the party animal type, who has no higher aspirations than the immediate stimulation of the senses. You know, eat, sleep, drink, be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Let the good times roll. Don't give a thought to anything. If it moves, try to gratify your senses with it. Don't worry about anything. Don't think about anything. This kind of person can be happy in this world in a very limited way. Such a person never thinks about anything deep. Just, you know, give me my instant sense stimulation is all I need. Then what's the other kind of person that can be happy in this world? This kind of person you see very rarely. That kind of person is the transcendentalist, the full-fledged spiritualist who dwells outside the confines of the illusory energy. Such a person, he or she, dwells outside the matrix of illusion. That kind of person can truly be happy in this world because they're tasting an experience that has nothing to do with the material energy. When we say the material energy, we're talking about things that have a beginning and an end. As long as your hopes for pleasure are tied up with things that have a beginning and end, you're going to be frustrated. So the full-fledged spiritualist, the full Krishna conscious person, the transcendentalist, never tries to enjoy that which is inferior. Inferior means it's composed of the temporary material energy. That is true happiness, which comes from because of freedom from material contact and full connection to spiritual contact. Now, which category of those two would you say you're in? Who feels they're in category number one? Please raise your hand. All right. Who says they're in category number two? Please raise your hand. Okay. Where does that leave us? That leaves us in category three. And what is category three? Everyone in between those two poles, category one and two. You're neither a complete party animal, nor are you a full spiritual person. So everyone in category three gets to suffer. So congratulations. You see, category one is like a complete fool. You might have seen like persons who are just completely foolish. They, you know, they. I've met a few people like that. They tell me, you know, I watch so much television, and more than the TV shows, I like the adverts. I mean, they really excite. Have you ever met anyone like that? Yeah, that's a complete fool. Yeah. And of course, business persons, they love these kind of fools who do impulse shopping. Somebody just walks into a store and, oh, look at that. I'll buy it. The businesses love those kind of persons. The kind of shoppers that business persons don't like are those who are discriminating buyers. Well, I wonder, is that product, how is it rated? What are the reviews? And they ask a whole lot of questions. But the kind of shoppers that businesses really like are the impulse buyers. They just walk past something, and their senses are grabbed by, ooh, look at that. Oh, I gotta have that. If you've ever gone shopping with little kids, your own or somebody else's, you know, they walk to a store, and especially a supermarket. They go to the candy section, and they're always tugging on their mom. Mommy, buy this for me. Buy that, Mom. I want this. I want that. People with uncontrolled senses who have no deep thoughts about life, they're like that. In one sense, you can't really say they're happy. It's ignorance. But, as the expression goes, ignorance is bliss, where wisdom is folly. It's not real happiness, but such persons can delude themselves that, oh, yes, everything is fine, and no need to think deeply about anything. So, you all say you're not in that category. And then we describe category two. Those who are truly happy because they're not seeking to relish the material energy. They don't seek satisfaction in the material world. And you all seem to say that you're not in that category either. In between are those who are struggling. Sometimes they're spiritual and sometimes they're not. Or they're spiritual on the weekdays and on the weekends. They're materialistic. Or it just depends on who they meet, you know. Whether they're going to be spiritual or material. It depends on if they're surrounded by any appealing sense objects. So, in between is this big category of persons who can go either way. And they do suffer anxiety. Because they know too much to be a complete fool, but they don't know enough to be a fool spiritually. This is the predicament. They're not dumb enough, you know, to be a party animal all the time, but they're not smart enough to be a full transcendentalist, a full spiritualist all the time. So they're kind of caught in the middle, and therefore they have anxiety. Now, by default, it seems you all have chosen category three, in between. since none of you raised your hands for Category 1 or Category 2. So, Category 3 means that, you know, you're thinking about life sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. And sometimes, indeed, you indulge in your senses. So you go back and forth between those two things. This is the third category, in between. Everybody in the in-between category feels anxiety. Because as I said, they're not dumb enough to be a party animal type, and they're not smart enough to be a fool spiritually. Now we've got to make progress. One way or the other. And I hope the reason why you're here is that you want to make progress toward the spiritual side. We need to face the fact that we have this desire for pleasure which cannot be satisfied within the matrix of illusion. It's not possible. Now, why is it that we have this desire for pleasure? Where does it originate? The Vedic knowledge of ancient India teaches you that because you are part of the Supreme Soul, Krishna, you have this propensity for pleasure. It's there in the origin, the supreme source of everything. And because you're part of the Supreme Source, you're part of Krishna, that's why you also have the desire for pleasure. But the mistake that's being made is that we're searching for pleasure within the matrix of illusion. We don't know anything outside that prison. Once we understand that we have the desire for pleasure because we're part of Krishna, who has an unlimited desire for pleasure, then we'll focus our attention not so much on the matrix of illusion, but we'll focus our attention on the supreme spiritual reality. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. As long as we torture ourselves by trying to satisfy our senses with temporary matter, our life is going to be very frustrating and disappointing. Most people don't want to discuss this point. Most people just like to encourage one another in illusory pursuits. But how much encouragement are you getting in your life when you try for the most important pursuits, your spiritual development? Do you feel the encouragement from your friends and family and society? Are they cheering for you? I hear you're really getting interested in spiritual development. That's wonderful. Oh, I really envy you. Have you heard that already? Definitely, you're doing the best thing in life. We need more people like you. You're a fine example for our community, for our city, for our nation. Have you heard any phrase like that? It is very rare for someone to want to face reality and do something about it. Try to understand that we have this pleasure-seeking capacity and there's nothing you can do about that because you're part of Krishna. You have, in minute quantity, the qualities of Krishna. Krishna is the unlimited enjoyer. That's the most important thing you should understand about the science of God. We're not talking about the Supreme as creator, maintainer, and destroyer. That's not so important. We are talking about the ultimate characteristics and activities of the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that is pleasure and enjoyment without limitation, without restriction. That is Krishna's specialty. Now, because we are tiny parts of Krishna, we have these propensities, but a very tiny amount. Just like a drop of seawater has the same qualities as the whole ocean, but very tiny bit of salt is there in the drop of seawater as compared to what's in the whole ocean. So please bear in mind this paradox, this mystical paradox of your existence. You have this yearning for pleasure, but you're seeking to gratify that yearning in the wrong way. If you can grasp the dynamics of this paradox, you'll save yourself a lot of trouble. First, admit you have a desire for pleasure. That's the way it is. You're not going to be able to stomp that out of you. No matter how many times you tell yourself things like, I'll never fall in love again, or I'll never try to enjoy again, or I'm just going to work and work. That's all. I'm not going to expect any pleasure. You can say all those kinds of things, but because you have this capacity in you for seeking pleasure, it's always going to be like that. Another paradox that you should bear in mind is that you have a body of matter. That body of matter that you, the spirit soul, are wearing is composed of desires. Everyone knows how your body has urges. Now, the paradox about having a material body with material urges is that even though you have the urges of your body, those urges will never be satisfied. You can figure this riddle of existence out. You'll save yourself a lot of trouble. So many people think, since I have urges, since my body has urges, they will be satisfied. Well, then why would we have urges if they can't be satisfied? It takes a very special person to understand that even though I have urges, my body, even though my body has urges, they're not going to be satisfied. This takes a lot of developed vision to see the matrix of illusion for what it actually is, to see the paradoxes of the illusion. That takes a lot of courage and self honesty, integrity. Most people will just not push things any further than, well, I have urges, so that means they're going to be satisfied. Yeah. I've got an urge, you've got an urge, everybody's got an urge. It must be that satisfaction is just around the corner because we all got urges. How many dare to think that it doesn't work that way? And how long in life are we going to wait before the truth hits us that just because you have urges, big deal, doesn't mean they're going to be satisfied? This is the sad joke of the matrix of illusion, material matrix. But most people don't have the depth in order to see what's going on. It sounds like a ripoff, doesn't it? You get urges, you got a body full of urges, but those urges can't be satisfied. So some people get angry. Well, if there's a God, certainly this God doesn't know what he's doing. Otherwise, why would we get these urges even though they can't be satisfied? Think about it. How many of us are willing to admit to this riddle? I have urges which cannot be fulfilled. Sounds hopeless, doesn't it? Men and women, they know about this kind of inadequacies. The men here, you know, you have your fantasies about what the ideal woman would do for you. And as all the men know, you never meet a woman who matches your fantasies, because the creature doesn't exist. But the men are plagued by these fantasies. And then the women have their fantasies about the perfect man. We won't speak about the male fantasies, but they're a bit gross. But we can speak about the female fantasies. It's easy to speak about that. The basic male program is pretty gross. As any honest man will tell you. Then you have the female fantasy. He's going to listen to me. Every time I want to talk, he's going to be so eager to hear everything. He's going to notice my every mood. When my mood shifts, he'll notice right away, and he'll just automatically change according to my changing mood. This is the female fantasy. And of course, the men know. But the man doesn't exist. So then there's a whole game of pretending. The men try to pretend that they are going to be that person who the women are fantasizing about. And the women try to pretend they are going to be what the men are fantasizing about. But neither of them can sustain it. They can put on a temporary show for a weekend or two. Or even a few months at most. But after a while, you know, the real truth becomes evident. The man cannot match the female's fantasies, and the female can't match the male's fantasies. So what they do after a while is just say, hey, well, okay, we'll just make the best that we can. You don't match my fantasies, but anyway, you're something, and you're better than nothing. You know, stay there. Have any of you told your partners that, well, you know, you're not what I fantasize about, but you're better than nothing? Has anybody ever said that? Huh? No, you dare say that's an honest thing. But how many of you thought that? Raise your hand. How many of you thought that? Yeah, see? I've got a few honest people here. No, every one of you who's had some romantic encounter or whatever, however you classify it, you thought, well, I mean, after the initial fireworks are over, you know, and the joy of the initial encounter, after that wears off, you start to think, well, yeah, he or she is not everything, but hey, it's better than being alone. At least you have someone to talk to, someone to poke, you know? And then you become expedient. Well, how long can we drag this one on for? And after a while, you start thinking, well, even though I was sure there'd be no one who would match my fantasy, just maybe there could be someone else. Right? Not everybody thinks? Right? Yeah. This is the honest truth. But you don't tell your partner that. But in your own mind, you start thinking, well, I don't wanna lose what I've got, but at the same time, you know. Right? You know, something in the hand is worth more than nothing, but at the same time, I wonder. Now, I'm not going to be like overly utopian, and you know, I expect that my dream boat, my fantasy will suddenly appear before me. But you know, maybe there just is a bit more juice available in someone else. I won't say anything now, though. But, you know, I'll go on with the situation, but I'll keep my eyes halfway open for any other opportunity. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not that I want to end the particular relationship I'm in now. At the same time, you know, I mean, you have to be flexible and... I mean, life is full of a lot of possibilities. That's all I'm saying. Life is full of a lot of possibilities. You got to keep an open mind. Well, you know, utilizing what you have right now. Because most people are afraid of being alone. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to be alone because then you start thinking about yourself. You want someone to pass the time with. Just like little kids play with toys, so adults play with each other to pass the time. Now, if we think deeply about the situation, we'll see this very astonishing paradox. As an adult, I have this material body, which is full of urges, full of desires. But at the same time, these desires can't be fulfilled. These urges can't be completely satisfied. What to do? You see, as I said before, we've got to get it out of our heads that just because I have urges, there must be satisfaction for these urges. No! This is the matrix of illusion. Urges do not equal satisfaction. Therefore, the ancient Vedic knowledge of India will tell you that there is repeated birth and death, and that the wheel of reincarnation, as it's popularly called, the wheel of repeated birth and death is turned by this frustrated desire. Let's say, okay, you're 20 years old, and you've got desires. So, you proceed through life, if you live a full life, you proceed through life trying to fulfill those desires, which can't be done. So at the time of death, you've got this backlog of frustration, whether you're conscious of it or not. You've got this backlog of frustration because you've tried all your life to fulfill desires that cannot be fulfilled. So that frustration in your consciousness, that backlog of unfulfilled desires, pushes you into the next life. And you take a body, which doesn't have to be human. If you don't merit a human body, you don't get a human body. But please understand, the whole engine of life after life, the whole engine of changing one body to another body, going from this life to the next life, that whole process is powered by frustrated desire. You couldn't get the full taste you wanted in this lifetime. Therefore, your hankering is still there. Because your hankering is still there at the time of death, you have to take birth again to try to fulfill those desires. And that means you're repeating the same problem because those desires cannot be fulfilled. So in this way you go through life after life after life. What is the only way to get out of this cycle? To stop desiring inappropriately. To stop the trap of faulty desire. Then you can get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. I remember when you were a little kid, did you ever go to the ride on the carousel? How many of you rode on the carousel when you were a little kid? Yeah, everyone's done that. Your parents took you, right? And, you know, what they have, these like horses that go up and down? Yes? Yeah, the real complicated carousels, they just don't spin around. But the things you sit on the carousel, they also move up and down as the thing is turning. Yes? You all experience that? Or if you're, you know, if you're too little a kid, you're afraid to get on the horses that go up and down as the carousel turns. They have seats you can also just sit on. So the cycle of repeated birth and death is like this carousel. You just go round and round, and the whole thing is powered by frustrated desire. And there's an unlimited supply of that frustrated desire because people don't understand the trap. That just because I have urges doesn't mean they're going to be satisfied. If you want to get off the carousel, you've got to do something about this frustrated desire. That means you've got to separate the urges from satisfaction. The two don't meet. Satisfaction can only be experienced on the spiritual platform. Therefore, if you take to the spiritual platform, you're solving the whole problem of the cycle of repeated birth and death. So this is an interesting subject matter, the mystical paradox. Most people cannot grasp this concept. It seems so obvious to them in their delusion. It seems so clear. I have urges, therefore there must be satisfaction. You get it? Because we have urges, there's satisfaction. No, not on the material plane. You can spend your whole life struggling to satisfy those desires. You will not succeed, but what you will succeed in is taking another birth so you can continue the same fruitless struggle. All right, now we're talking about the second subject. Our lifespan, the length of our life. I do exercises, so I was watching the exercise video that comes with a particular exercise system I use. I use resistance training, you know what that is. So, the video is made by some guy in Australia in Sydney who owns a few fitness centers, and he's made a new exercise gadget, which is, that works pretty good. So he starts off his pitch by saying, I know everyone out there wants to live a long and full and healthy life into their old age. So, here's what you gotta do. That would sound like an agreeable statement, right? Everyone here would say that. You want to live a long, full, active, and healthy life into your old age? That sounds good. Anyone object? But you should object. You should say, well, this is a very inconsequential aspiration. I mean, why should I just want to live a long, full, healthy life into old age? When, you know, that's actually not a long time. That's a very short time. Basically, what you're saying is that, yeah, just give me a few moments of flapping around, you know, and then I'll be old and it'll be okay. Is that as high as our aspirations get? Do you think when you're old, if you reach old age, when you're old, you know, and you're just going to be, I was so happy. I had a few moments of flapping around. That's all I wanted to do. That's not going to be like that. What older persons will tell you if you talk to them is that their life passed so quickly. And now they're left without the strength and help to try to fulfill their desires, which could not be fulfilled even if they were healthy and young. From the viewpoint of the ancient Vedic knowledge of India, there's nothing at all so special about a so-called long, healthy, full life, whatever full life means, into your old age. No, the significant life is one that solves the problem of things like old age and death and disease. That is a significant life. That's a full life. But no, simply to flap around for a few years, try to satisfy your senses, and then get old and die, That's a full life. I want you all to visualize yourself, yeah? Visualize yourself as a very elderly person, you know, in your late 70s. Think about it. How would you look back on your life? What would you say about yourself? You just imagine yourself, you know, 77. I can just hear you saying, yeah, I had some good times. Met a lot of people. Made a lot of mistakes. Tried to help people when I could. What's coming next, you don't know. But you don't want to think about that. You'll notice often that elderly people like to surround themselves with young children, because in that way they can vicariously feel youthful. That's why they like grandchildren around, because in that way they can feel close to youth, close to what they don't have. So just see yourself as a 77-year-old person, applauding every time your grandchild does any little silly thing. I remember once, I was in Tokyo, and Japan has a very elderly population. So I was in a park. I just went out to try and get some fresh air, which is a hard thing to find in Tokyo. I don't know if any of you have ever been to Tokyo, but you can, in that city, you can drive in any direction for 2 hours and you'll never get out of the city. You'll just see, block after block of buildings, urban development. For 2 hours, you can drive in any direction and you'll just, see massive urban development. So anyway, I went to the park just to see a tree. And so I saw this. I was studying this elderly Japanese couple. They're obviously grandparents. They had their grandchild that was about 5 years old, and he was in the park with them. And a little fellow would climb up on one of the, one of the things they had in the park for kids to play with. He would climb up, and then he would climb down. So when he would climb up, the grandparents would say, "Oh!" And then the little boy would smile. And then the little boy would climb down again, and again the grandparents. So, I was thinking deeply about this. Yes, I was thinking deeply about it. Of course, it's nice that the grandparents are taking their grandchild to the park, but I was after something more. I was noticing how, although the grandparents were elderly, they were feeling youthful because they were with their young grandchild. It gave them, hope. Okay, we can't be young and healthy, but our grandchild's young and healthy, so we're okay. That's the part I didn't like. It's hiding from reality. Now, just think about your lifespan. What are you going to consider a success? 75 years before your body breaks down, you'll say, okay, that's fine. Is that going to satisfy you? How much will be sufficient for you? 50 years, huh? Sometimes people say, I just want 50 good years and hey, and I'll go. What do you think? What's the standard you want? Yeah, I just want to do a lot of things. I want to be active, do a bit of traveling, walk out into nature a few times, have some job that challenges me. And then, yeah, eventually settle down, have a bit of a family, try to do a little something for the world sometime. Maybe I'll get involved in some ecological issues, some green issues. Yeah, that'd be good. And then, yeah, I'll get old, and I don't know what I'll do then when I'm old. Can't really party when you're old. And then you start wondering, well, what do old people do? You should ask them, if you have any parents or grandparents who are in their 70s, ask them, what do you do? What's it like? Have any of you done this before? Amazing. I'm sure some of you have elderly relatives, right? But you never ask them, what do you do? What do you think about? You know, what's going on inside you, you know? Yeah. Did you see? The social etiquette is that you don't do that. Everyone's afraid to ask that. The elderly people don't want to be asked that. And the younger persons don't ask that question because they just figure, well, that's kind of impolite, you know. You should just let them kind of be old in peace, you know. Don't disturb their ignorance. And don't show your own ignorance by asking them. So this way everyone kind of lives in what can be called a mass consensual trance. We'll all just pretend. We'll all just put each other into illusion and pretend there's nothing else. If you're actually a student of life, you're always asking questions and trying to get to the bottom of things. So, yeah, you talk to elderly people. You're 77. What does it feel like? What are your hopes? What are your, what do you think your future's going to be? What are your regrets? If someone can fix this. What are your regrets? It's interesting. Also, when I was in Japan, I did talk to an elderly lady. She was in her 60s, and she actually was taking an interest in Krishna consciousness. So I was asking her, you know, how do you feel and what do you reflect about? And she told me, you know, I lived my whole life as a normal, upstanding Japanese lady. I worked hard till I was 50. Then when I was 50, I stayed at home taking care of my children. And that was hard work. While my children worked, I stayed home taking care of their kids. So I worked till I was 50 at a job, then I worked till I was 60, helping to raise my children's kids. Now, my children's kids are grown up, so I'm not working, I'm not taking care of kids. I have so much time now. And then she began to cry. But even though I have so much time, I'm so tired. The body is so tired from working so hard. That even when I want to read Bhagavad Gita, even when I want to chant Hare Krishna, I don't have the strength to stay awake. And she began to cry. She said, don't young people understand that their strength is not going to be with them all the time? If while they're young, they should be doing what I want to do now. Why don't the young people understand this? They don't know what it's like to live without strength. Why should they put off their quest for spiritual enlightenment, thinking they'll do it when they get old? When you're old, you don't have the strength. So I thought it was very interesting talking to her. Now, the point of Srimad Bhagavatam, for those of you who are reading it and will be reading it, is that simply a long life without spiritual development is a waste of time. In fact, it's better that you live just for a few moments, if you can live a few full moments in full Krishna consciousness, in full spiritual consciousness. That is the valuable thing, and not simply living a long life of ignorance. But the emphasis these days is that everyone wants to live as long as possible, even though they're completely ignorant, have no idea what's going on, and not a clue why they have this particular body. They have not a clue what their next body will be. But they just want to drag on in the years. The actual standard is something else. The actual standard is better to live even a short life, but to have some moments of that short life in which you are fully Krishna conscious, fully spiritually conscious. Then, even though it's a short life, it's a valuable life. It's not the quantity of your life that's going to make you a success. It's the quality of, it's the quality of the years that you're allotted. Better a short life of high quality than a long life of no quality. So these are the things that a Krishna conscious person thinks about. And you have to think about these things if you want pleasure. Pleasure is the property of those who have superior intelligence, who can arrange their life for ascending to the spiritual platform. Pleasure is for them. So please remember the two types of persons who can be happy in this world. Everyone in between must suffer. So kindly make progress towards the spiritual side. If you take seriously what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you'll be able to grab your life by the horns, so to speak, and steer yourself in the right direction. The greatest information comes from Lord Krishna. What is life? How to live life? What is illusion? What is reality? We would want that everyone can take advantage of this most wonderful knowledge, so that they can properly mold their lifestyle and be most productive and most satisfied. Any questions? Yes. To attain what? Very good question. Krishna consciousness has as its main practice cultivating the proper sound in your life. Sound is the most important aspect of your life. Sound causes you to be imprisoned in the matrix of illusion, and the right sound can give you escape from the material illusion. The most important thing about Krishna consciousness is associating with spiritual sound. Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra on your own and with others is the main way for getting out of the matrix of illusion, reviving your activities of pure spiritual pleasure. That all comes from cultivation of the proper sound. Tomorrow morning, if you have to go to work, probably you'll use an alarm clock. So you're deeply asleep, but then the alarm rings, and by the sound you wake up. The sound wakes you up, and then you begin to think about all your responsibilities you have to do during the day. But until the alarm rings, you're deep asleep and you're not thinking about what your actual responsibilities are. Similarly, the Hare Krishna mantra wakes you up out of your bodily identification, out of your pursuits of temporary, insubstantial pleasure. And then the Hare Krishna mantra revives in you your memory of your eternal spiritual activities in relation to Krishna. Okay? If you want to know more about that, we have so many nice books which will teach you all the ins and outs. Anything else? So now we're going to have some chanting of Hare Krishna together. This is a kind of sacrifice, this chanting. By sacrifice I mean it's an activity performed by many persons, and because it's more than one person, the effect is more multiplied. The more persons who come together for chanting Hare Krishna, the more auspiciousness can happen in this world. That means you're not only chanting Hare Krishna for yourself, you're also chanting Hare Krishna, or your chanting the Hare Krishna mantra does affect others, it does affect the environment.